From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois' state government and politics.
Ripping families apart, people who are law-abiding residents of the state of Illinois or of this country. We're going to stand up for them in the state of Illinois and do everything that we can to protect them.
Governor J.B. Pritzker speaking this week. Elections have consequences. Donald Trump took office on Monday, and the president entered with sweeping changes. Some of those could have a big impact on the city of Chicago and Illinois, including when it comes to immigration. We'll discuss that and more coming up here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guest this week, glad to have her back, Heather Sharon with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Thanks, Heather, for agreeing to be with us today.
I'm happy to be back.
So, Heather, Charlie and I not in Chicago, but I'm sure the city, from what I've read at least, seems on edge all week. And among these top concerns has been these immigration raids that the Trump administration has promised. So far, as we sat down to record this show, apparently we do not have evidence that this has happened here in the state of Illinois or in Chicago, at least. What has been the mood so far there since Donald Trump came back into office?
Well, it really started with a report by the Wall Street Journal that the federal government under the Trump administration would send hundreds of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers to Chicago as soon as the early morning of Tuesday, so just hours after President Trump returned to office. That report was widely disseminated, and it really forced immigration rights advocates and other people who had been sort of bracing for the president to make good on his promises to launch his mass deportation efforts in Chicago, to step up efforts to educate people about their rights, to prepare, to sort of provide legal counseling if necessary. But it didn't materialize. And the Washington Post reported that the border czar, Tom Homan, said that those plans were leaked, and that prompted everything to be rethought out of an abundance of caution. And we've not seen any sort of major immigration raids in Chicago. There have been smaller raids in Boston and New Jersey, but all of what we've seen thus far is in line with what happened on a typical day under former President Biden. Typically, on an average day, about 400 people thought to be undocumented were either detained or issued deportation orders. So it's very much in line with sort of the pre-Trump second term status quo. But there's no doubt people are deeply, deeply on edge in Chicago. We've seen reports that business in Little Village along the 26th Street business quarter is down significantly. There have been scattered reports that attendance at Chicago public schools is down in schools that serve large immigrant communities, because of course, part of the changes made by President Trump were to revoke a policy that prohibited deportation efforts at quote-unquote sensitive locations like schools and churches. Those protections are no longer in effect, but it's not really clear what that will mean for Chicagoans.
Yeah, I would think this is going to continue for a while, Charlie, when it comes to this nervousness over it, even if we don't see these massive raids that have been talked about. But yeah, the idea that you can go into a church or a school, that could be really problematic in these communities going forward here, and I would think for quite some time.
Yeah, and part of it is, as Heather suggested, is to make people worried and fearful and afraid to do the normal things. There was a story in the Trib the other day talking to a mom who said how she used to go to pick up her kid at school and they'd park and wait for the kids to come out. Now she kind of drives by and is very careful to obey the speed limit and all the rest of the traffic laws and wait till her kid comes out and then almost pick up the kid as she's driving, just because she's so worried about this. And maybe it occurred to me and others, maybe the whole point behind this what I consider to be just a reprehensible, cold-blooded approach on the behalf of Trump, is to scare people, to frighten them. And so that maybe if I'm here and I don't have documentation, and I'm from Mexico, I'm thinking to myself, man, if I have to put up with this nonsense, I'm just going to go back home and kind of self-deport. And that could probably work for many people. But on the other hand, if I'm from Haiti or if I'm from Venezuela, I really don't have any safe options to go home. My life would be in danger. My kids' life would be in danger. So it's, I think it's, again, I think it's basically, I think it's an evil effort on the part of Trump to scare people and to go against well-established constitutional principles. But again, he seems to be a guy for whom the Constitution is not mandatory. It's more or less advisory.
Well, Heather, this has been something, though, that the Trump administration or Donald Trump on the campaign trail talked about, even really going back to his first election. So it's not a surprise, I guess. So were people prepared there in Chicago, many of these immigrant communities, were they prepared for this?
Yes. To anybody who was paying attention, either during the first Trump administration, during the campaign, or during the transition from the Biden to the Trump administration, none of these changes should be a surprise. However, I think that there was a lot of what I've had described to me as magical thinking among undocumented immigrants. There was the sense that these were campaign promises never meant to be fulfilled, and that they were sort of, you know, sound and fury signifying nothing. But and if they were implemented, the sense was that people who consider themselves to be law-abiding undocumented immigrants, you know, people like the vast majority of immigrants in Chicago and the nation who, you know, do not commit crimes and are not involved in criminal activity, that they would be spared. And I think that that's just, there's no evidence to suggest that that is the policy that the Trump administration is pursuing. One of the other changes to immigration enforcement that Trump has made he has empowered agents to not only detain people that they have a warrant for, because they've been involved in some sort of criminal activity, either charged or convicted, but they are also now empowered to assess the citizenship status of everybody around them. So in Newark yesterday, we heard the mayor of the New Jersey City say that, you know, ICE agents raided a seafood restaurant and ended up detaining not only the people that they were looking for because they were believed to be undocumented, but also a number of citizens, including a veteran of the U.S. military. So that, I think, is an indication that folks who had hoped that maybe this was just going to be targeted at criminals were not paying close enough attention to what Trump was actually saying. He, of course, has vowed to launch the largest mass deportation effort in American history, and that he wants to deport all roughly 11 million undocumented immigrants that are believed to be in the United States.
Well, Heather, Chicago and some other cities in Illinois are what are known as sanctuary cities. What does that really do in this situation? Is there anything that the city can do to protect people, especially, you know, I know Mayor Johnson's talked about this, the governor talked about it, but what legally can they do?
So they will not be able to take an active role in stopping or thwarting these deportation raids. That would put those officials in jeopardy of federal crimes. It's a crime to interfere with a federal agent. However, city officers and city officials will not help these deportation efforts, and that is really where the bulk of the city's power lies. So, for example, if Chicago police arrest somebody, let's say, for shoplifting, and the federal government believes that person to be undocumented, in non-sanctuary cities, they could ask the police to basically not release that person on a promise to appear until they were able to come and take custody of that person. That's something that Chicago police are prohibited from doing because of the city's welcoming city ordinance. Also, federal officials can't ask city officials for any lists of people that city officials might believe to be undocumented to sort of help them sort of find those people. But if, you know, the president decides that he is going to send, you know, ICE agents to Chicago to raid restaurants or other places of business where they believe undocumented immigrants to be, there's not a whole lot that the city can do to actively stop that. Their only power is to essentially educate people about their rights and to stand back and not aid.
Yeah, Charlie, I also saw where they basically have said that if local officials get in the way, like let's say the governor or let's say a mayor or alderman, somebody gets in the way of this, they could be arrested and taken to jail. So, I mean, this could get really strange as we watch this play out, don't you think?
Yeah, and ultimately it'll come down to the legal question, because there's long established precedent that local law enforcement can't be the ones to enforce federal rules and regulations. That's up to the federal government. And so there will be legal challenges. And if ICE and the characters now in the Department of Justice want to, say, try and prosecute Mayor Johnson or Governor Pritzker for not cooperating with their ideas when they want to send the jackbooted stormtroopers into Chicago public schools, that will play out in the courts. And as I say, from what I understand, the precedent is that local law enforcement can't be required to go along with the feds when it contradicts a state law. And there is a state law that says that basically you don't have to cooperate with ICE on this to help them round up people. And so I think this is all going to wind up in the courts, and the precedent would seem to suggest that Pritzker and Johnson are on the right side. And as a matter of fact, the mayor said the other day, and this is a quote, "I find it quite frankly unconscionable and reprehensible that you have an administration that is dead set on causing fear and anxiety. What we are not going to tolerate and accept is the bulldozing of the federal government, separating families and ripping people apart."
Well, I did see also that Donald Trump, of course, wants to, one of the things he talked about, ending birthright citizenship. And that's been sort of assumed for a long time to be the law based on the 14th Amendment of the Constitution. So the state of Illinois, as soon as he signed an executive order, this was one of the states that got involved in a lawsuit. I believe there are a couple of different lawsuits out there, but the one that Illinois was involved with a few other states, a judge has put a hold on this, at least temporarily. Heather, this also, I mean, this goes beyond just the fact that, hey, let's round up people who are criminals who are here illegally. This really would be a drastic change, I would guess.
Yes, and it is. It was blocked by a judge in Seattle as part of the lawsuit that Illinois brought in part with Washington State. And the judge, who has been on the bench for nearly 40 years after being appointed by Ronald Reagan, said that it was blatantly unconstitutional. So that ruling, of course, was, you know, just to institute a temporary restraining order. The legal process will move forward in the first week of February as the states seek a permanent injunction against the executive order. But this would be a wholesale rewrite of the Constitution in a way that was explicitly adopted by Congress during the Civil War era as a reaction to the Civil War to ensure that Black Americans had full citizenship, and has been adjudicated by the Supreme Court as a part of a challenge brought over a Chinese immigrant's citizenship status. So nearly unanimously, legal scholars believe that this is without merit. The thing that worries people is, of course, that the Supreme Court has shown a willingness to overturn long-settled law you know, in various circumstances, and the concern is that this would be one of them. However, it is, I think, a long shot, even if the president is determined to put the full force of his office behind the effort.
I thought the comment by the judge was interesting. And here's a quote. I've been on the bench for over four decades. I can't remember another case where the question presented was as clear as this one is. And then he said, as Heather noted, this is a blatantly unconstitutional order. And he also asked the attorney representing Trump's side, he says, I have difficulty understanding how a member of the bar could state unequivocally that this is a constitutional order. So it was pretty clear, and this is a judge. He was appointed by Ronald Reagan, so he's not some, quote, flighty liberal, close quote, but he's a fairly conservative person. He's saying after all these years, this is the first time he's heard something as blatantly unconstitutional as this. You know, I don't think that you can contradict the Constitution by an executive order, much as Trump would like to do that.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield, along with Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon with Chicago Tonight. Well, we mentioned that Chicago being a sanctuary city and Illinois backing all of this as well and saying, you know, we're not going to cooperate. Now, what other problems could result here for the city and the state, Heather, by not cooperating with federal agents? Could we wind up seeing some federal aid be lost for these jurisdictions? Is that a possibility?
Yes. One of the executive orders that Trump signed once he took office was to revoke federal aid to self-proclaimed sanctuary cities. Now, if you cast your memory back to 2017, you'll remember that the first Trump administration tried to do something very serious. Very similarly, Chicago challenged it in court and ended up taking it all the way to the Supreme Court and won a significant victory that prevented the Trump administration from revoking law enforcement grants because of the city's welcoming city ordinance. However, it's not clear exactly what aid the federal government will seek to revoke from Chicago. Biden administration scrambled in its waning days to ensure that the city got the rest of the funds that it needed to complete the extension of the CTA red line south to 130th Street. Governor J.B. Pritzker told NBC5 this week that if the Trump administration attempted to revoke that award, he would challenge that in court. But, you know, the state especially relies on federal grants to operate on a daily basis, and it's just simply not clear how Trump will make good on these orders to revoke federal funding from so-called sanctuary states and cities like Chicago and Illinois, and what that will mean for city and state budgets going forward.
Charlie, we've seen in the past where certain projects might get a little favoritism from Washington when it comes to certain states and who's in charge in certain states, but I don't know that I remember anything as threatening as kind of what's being talked about right now, because and people may not realize just how much money comes in from the federal government to any state. But here in Illinois, certainly this is even if this ends up being not successful down the road, that what Donald Trump was talking about, it still could really lead to a lot of problems here in the state of Illinois and the city of Chicago.
Yeah. And I think, as Heather indicated, if Trump tries to revoke agreements already with the city on the basis that, well, I'm the president, I can do what I want, and these people didn't bow down to me, so I'm going to punish them, that would be challenged in court. But on the other hand, going forward, my guess is that any discretionary funding in the next few years, Chicago is not going to get anything. They won't get a penny. That is probably going to hold true for most of the states where the voters did not vote for Trump. There'll be a big effort to try and hurt not just sanctuary cities, but states that didn't support Trump, because he's a very vindictive guy. The counterbalance will be the fact that Congress actually has to appropriate funds, and there will be pushback for some members who will say, hey, yeah, my state voted for Harris, but we need this money. And depending on their numbers and their strength and their relationship with other members of Congress, they might get something for their state. But we only have three of our congressional district who are Republicans. So I'm thinking that they're not going to have a whole lot of influence in terms of protecting the state in federal funding going forward.
Yeah, and Heather, the city of Chicago has to be worried about that, I would think. The city has its own budget problems that it's dealing with.
Oh, it's really, really concerned. And I think that part of what Trump hopes to leverage, because, you know, we saw in the days before he took office an attempt by several older people to sort of weaken the city's welcoming city ordinance in an attempt, they said, to sort of signal to the Trump administration that Chicago officials were willing to work with them on deportation efforts. Now, that was roundly rejected by a supermajority of a city council that has agreed on very little in the past couple of years. But it's not clear that Chicago has the financial sort of wherewithal to withstand a serious blow from the federal government.
Well, while we have you here, I did want to kind of touch on a few issues that are going on with the city. And one of those, of course, is for some money from the state of Illinois. That seems to be a big lobbying push that's going to be made. So fill us in on that.
Well, you know, the city council only narrowly approved a budget for 2025. And usually after a budget is approved, the mayor gets to take a victory lap and sort of talk about all of the great things that money is going to do for Chicagoans in the coming years. But there was no sort of honeymoon after the budget for Mayor Johnson. Instead, he sort of limped across the finish line in a way, and then spent his post-city council victory press conference saying several times that the city needed the state's help to raise what he calls progressive sources of income to avoid having to sort of again propose a significant property tax hike, which was unanimously rejected by the city council. The city really has a limited ability to raise new revenue from sources other than property taxes, and that would require either legislation from the General Assembly signed by the governor, or additional grant money, or, you know, some sort of additional sort of financial support, which is going to be a tough, tough ask in the coming year, because, of course, the state of Illinois is facing its own budget crunch with a deficit of estimated somewhere in the neighborhood of $3 billion. And you guys know this as well as I do, even in the best of circumstances, special help for Chicago financially is always, always a difficult task to get through the General Assembly.
But would not the mayor have the power and the city council to legalize video gaming in the city without any further intervention by the state, by the General Assembly? Because that would bring in a ton of money, I believe.
Yes, the problem with that is that there are big fears that it would hurt the ongoing effort to get the Chicago casino off the ground. You know, that temporary casino now at the Medina Temple North has proved to be far less popular than city officials had hoped, bringing in a mere fraction of what city officials had been counting on. And there are a number of people who are concerned that if the city were to legalize video gaming at bars and other establishments, that would make that sort of effort to get the permanent casino off on the right foot almost impossible. So it's not clear to me whether there's really the political will to sort of make that change, for fear that it might be penny wise but pound foolish.
If I could make a comment on that, I think that concern is misplaced, because if you look at where the existing casinos are, I grew up in Joliet, for example. Joliet is second only to Springfield in the number of video gaming terminals it has, but it also has two casinos that are doing relatively well. It's the only city in the state that has more than one casino. And I'm thinking the folks who might go to Bally's when it's finally built where the Tribune Freedom Center used to be probably aren't the same folks who would go to a bar in the neighborhood and play the slots. I think you're talking about two different clientele. The folks who would go to Bally's would maybe be folks who are conventioners in Chicago or they're in the city for some other reason. And they say, hey, let's go to the casino for a night out. But I'm thinking your average guy, your Joe Sixpack, is not going to go downtown to the casino when he can go and play the slots at the neighborhood bar.
That's certainly the argument in favor of it.
Well, let's go now to our notes from the field. And Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
All righty. Well, the Illinois Board of Higher Education approved a fiscal year 2026 budget this week, and their recommended budget would increase funding by roughly $109 million, a 4% increase, not counting the contribution to the state university retirement system, of which I am a beneficiary and Sean someday will be. It includes an increase of $50 million for the monetary award program, bringing the total MAP appropriation to $762 million. And this is money that is allocated to help low-income, needy kids afford college tuition because it's a flat-out grant. There's also $25 million in operating funding for public universities and $7.2 million, a 2% increase for community colleges, adult education, and career and technical education. Now, this is the recommendation from the Board of Higher Education, and of course, it will go to the governor and his budgeteers and ultimately to the General Assembly.
And Heather?
Well, there has been a lot of reporting about the tensions between Governor J.B. Pritzker and Mayor Brandon Johnson, who, of course, clashed over a proposal to regulate the sale of intoxicating hemp. Now, both are Democrats. Both are firmly opposed to President Trump's immigration deportation efforts. But I thought it was quite startling the difference in how the two publicly confronted the reality of a second Trump administration. The governor has had a public schedule where he took questions from reporters nearly every day this week. He also made a point of going to Little Village and stopping in a business along 26th Street, where so many people, as we said, are fearful of being deported. By the other hand, the mayor has been relatively quiet. He's not held a full-scale press conference since January 15th. And only yesterday, on Thursday, did a series of one-on-one interviews with a number of news organizations, including me at WTTW, to address threats from the Department of Justice that local officials who stand in the way of mass deportation efforts could be subject to criminal charges. And I think that that differing sort of approach to the sort of public aspect of their jobs was interesting to me. And I think will be worth watching as we move forward into this new political era with once again, President Trump soaking up so much of the oxygen in the room.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Heather Sharon with WTTW's Chicago Tonight. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.